It's an honor for me to be here today and share a few thoughts for your consideration. This is a privilege that I don't take lightly. I want to open and set a tone with this statement from the AMA's Organizational Strategic Plan to embed racial justice and advance health equity. We acknowledge that we are all living off taken ancestral lands of indigenous peoples for thousands of years. We acknowledge the extraction of brilliance, energy, and life for forced labor, for labor forced upon people of African descent for more than 400 years. We celebrate the resilience and strength that all indigenous people and descendants of Africa have shown in this country and worldwide. We carry our ancestors in us, and we are continually called to be better as we lead this work. My theme for today is Make Me Wanna Holler, which a number of us are familiar with and some of us grew up with. It was recorded more than 50 years ago by Marvin Gaye. The song was titled Inner City Blues, Make Me Wanna Holler. It was released September the 16th, 1971. Its lyrics resonated with me then and remain relevant to this very day. With the ongoing threats of climate change, the last 3 years of COVID, increasing gun violence, rising inflation, and now monkeypox, it seems we just can't get a break. We all long for better days and a return to what we believe was normal. One of the things that's interesting is that the longer we live, the more history we have behind us. I was 23 years old in 1971, and until the age of 20, had always lived in West Woodlawn, which helped form me and my thinking. I could relate to Marvin's lyrics. This is some of what he sang. Rockets, moonshots, spend it on the have-nots. Money, we make it. Before we see it, you take it. Inflation, no chance. To increase, finance. Bills pile up, sky high. Send that boy off to die. Hang-ups, letdowns, bad breaks, setbacks. Natural fact is, I can't pay my taxes. Crime is increasing. Trigger happy policing. Panic is spreading. God knows where we're heading. And this was the refrain. Make me wanna holler and throw up both my hands. Yeah, make me wanna holler and throw up both my hands. Well, much of what's happening today makes me want to holler. Inflation is on the rise. And in an April 12th Time article by Eric Martin, he stated that the impacts of COVID-19, rising global inequality, and soaring food prices caused by the war in Ukraine are set to send more than 250 million more people into poverty this year. The combined hit may result in a total of 860 million people living below the $1.90 a day line by the end of 2022, or 263 million more than projected before the pandemic. That's equivalent to the entire population of the UK, France, Germany, and Spain combined. The poorest people will be hit the hardest, as is usually the case, with food costs accounting for 40% of consumer spending in sub-Saharan Africa, compared with 17% in advanced economies. In a July 14th article in Medscape called America's Biggest Source of Anxiety, hint, it's not COVID, the author Megan Brooks discussed the results from a recent national report from the American Psychiatric Association that revealed the following. Anxiety over the U.S. economy intensified in June, with 87% of Americans reporting they are anxious or very anxious about inflation, up 8 percentage points from the previous month. In addition to an uptick in worry about inflation, the poll shows that more than half of adults are worried about a potential loss of income. Number three, the latest poll also showed that about one-third of adults are worried about gun violence or a natural disaster, and that about a natural disaster personally affecting them. Climate change was number four. Anxiety was also up compared with May. And number five was concern about the midterm elections. Lastly, the June poll showed that 50% of Americans are anxious about the future of reproductive rights. And ironically, this poll was conducted before the Dobbs ruling. Let me shift for a moment to the issue of gun violence. Growing up in Highland Park, the expectation was this was a great community to raise a family, and that most kids would go to college and have a good life. However, on July 4th, Robert E. Cremo III forever changed that image and expectation. Cremo is the man charged with killing 7 people and wounding dozens of others in a mass shooting at the suburbs 4th of July parade. What he did was wrong. The evidence he was a perpetrator of such heinous deeds is strong and compelling. There is no denying his culpability. However, you and I are neither the judge or the jury. His fate will be decided by them. In another article from the New York Times, dated July 20, 2022, they point out that there is no consensus on what constitutes a mass shooting. Different groups define mass shootings differently, depending on the circumstances, including the number of victims, whether the victims are killed or wounded, and whether the shooting occurs in a public place. Does anybody know how many gun violence or mass shootings there have been in this country this year? Anyone have an idea? Gun violence has accounted for at least 356 mass shootings so far this year. Of those shootings, 16 involve 4 or more fatalities, including the one in Highland Park on July 4th. This was reported by the Gun Violence Archive. They also report that 692 mass shootings occurred last year, with 28 involving 4 or more fatalities. One day after the July 5th tragedy in Highland Park, the Washington Post reported that in 2021, almost 700 such incidents occurred, a jump from 611 in 2020 and 417 in 2019. In 1776, when America declared its independence from the British rule, the U.S. population, how big do you think the population of the U.S. was in 1776? Anybody want to take a guess? It was under 3 million. It's 2.5 million. It's more than 130 times larger today and over 330 million. The United States uses a representative form of democracy. This means that our government is elected by members of a state who are eligible to vote for their government officials. These government officials represent them at the state, local, and federal levels. It's a fragile system which depends heavily on the will, voice, judgment, and actions of the government. Our Constitution was signed during the Constitutional Convention of 1787 and ratified on June 21, 1788. This document elucidates the intentions of the framers and its purpose. The preamble is an introduction to the highest law of the land. However, it is not the law. It does not define government powers or individual rights. The preamble reads as follows: We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. The operative words are, we the people, which is an acknowledgement by the founding fathers that was written by them on behalf of the people. And the words, a more perfect union, are important because the founding fathers clearly realized that there was much more work ahead. We were not a perfect union then. We are not a perfect union now. Even then, some expressed and voiced concerns. In a letter from Abigail Adams to her husband John Adams, dated March 31, 1776, she wrote these words of caution: I long to hear that you have declared an independency, and by the way, in the new code of laws, which I suppose it will be necessary for you to make, I desire you to remember the ladies. It will be necessary for you to, I desire you would remember the ladies and be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. Do not put such unlimited power into the hands of the husbands. Remember, all men would be tyrants if they could. If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion and will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or representation. In an August 19, 1791 letter to Thomas Jefferson from Benjamin Banneker, a free African-American naturalist, mathematician, astronomer, and almanac author, Banneker was a landowner who also worked as a surveyor and farmer. He's best known for assisting in a survey that established the original borders of the District of Columbia, the federal capital district of the United States. Here's what Banneker wrote: I apprehend you will readily embrace every opportunity to eradicate that train of absurd and false ideas and opinions which so generally prevail with respect to us, and that your sentiments are concurrent with mine, which are that one universal Father hath given being to all of us, and that he hath not only made us all one flesh. Sir, if these are sentiments of which you are fully persuaded, I hope you cannot but acknowledge that it is the indispensable duty of those who maintain for themselves the rights of human nature and who profess the obligations of Christianity to extend their power and influence to the relief of every part of the human race from whatever burden or oppression they may unjustly labor under. Lastly, George Washington, the founding father of fathers, in his 1796 farewell address, which is most often remembered for its warning against hyperpartisanship, he makes the case that the alternate domination of one party over another and coinciding efforts to extract revenge upon their opponents have led to trouble and atrocities, and is itself a frightful despotism. But this leads at length to a more formal and permanent despotism. From Washington's perspective, judgment, political parties eventually and gradually incline the minds of men to seek security and the absolute power of an individual, leading to despotism. While he acknowledged the fact that parties are sometimes beneficial in promoting liberty and monarchies, he goes on to argue that political parties must be restrained in a popularly elected government because of their tendency to distract the government from their duties, create unfounded jealousness among groups and regions, raise false alarms among people, promote riots and insurrection, and provide foreign nations and interests access to the government where they can impose their own will upon the country. This is George Washington in 1796. Sounds like he could have written that today. Most of us rely on facts that are based on observations that have been verified to make important decisions. However, while we live in a time when information is plentiful, misinformation, defined as incorrect or misleading information presented as fact, and its co-conspirator, disinformation, defined as being deliberately deceptive, are in abundance. And far too many people confuse facts with factoids. A factoid is a statement based on an assumption, something that has never been confirmed. Adding fuel to this fire is the newest and perhaps most daring of these terms, alternative facts. A phrase used by Kellyanne Conway during a January 2017 Meet the Press interview, where she defended a false statement about the attendance number of Donald Trump's inauguration as President of the United States as alternative facts. Further, common sense, sound and prudent judgment based on simple perception of the situation or facts is in short supply. And many of our elected officials seem to have lost or have no moral compass. That is, the ability to judge right from wrong and behave in an appropriate way. As a result, American politics has been reduced to a zero-sum game, a situation in which one person or group can win something only by causing another person or group to lose it. I strongly believe the issue of abortion falls into that category. Let me pose a rhetorical question as an example. Can someone be pro-life and be pro-choice at the same time? What do people think? I believe they can. While such decisions can fall under the purview of the law, life and death are deeply personal and primarily moral and ethical decisions. I submit that reducing them to a choice between pro-life and pro-choice is narrow-minded and clouds the real issues. Being pro-choice does not inherently make one anti-life. Going back to democracy, it has many good points, but also some bad. It's not easy and sometimes seems unfair. It requires a lot of work, the active engagement of the governed, and is at its best when all of us participate. If my good friend and mentor, Samuel Dixon Black Jr., were here, he would remind us all that a change is going to come and that we need to be ready. Like those wise men before him, Tim knew that not only the only constant in life is change, and that we must be prepared when the opportunity knocks on our door. He also believed that people, just like you and me, can be and are agents of that change. As Megan so lovingly sang, what if we are the ones we've been waiting for? Each of us can do something to make a difference. The choice to do something or do nothing is yours. I leave it to each of you to make the right choice when opportunity comes knocking on your door. So let it be. Amen. Ashe. There was a Time magazine article about the James Webb Space Telescope. I'm sure people have heard about it. Its cameras can look deep into space and far into the past. Webb has the capacity to look 13.6 billion light years distance, which will be the furthest we've ever seen into space. This image of the galactic cluster known as SMACS-0723 contains thousands of galaxies, some of which are as far away as 13.1 billion light years. Since light takes a long time to travel so far, we are seeing galaxies not as they look today, but as they looked over 13.1 billion years ago. In contrast, if you look up the age of the Earth on science websites and publications, you'll generally find an estimate of 4.54 billion years. That's how long this planet has existed. It's clear that there are things about the universe we have yet to uncover, and that in many ways our home, this planet, is just one small part of a much larger, well-organized cosmos. I believe in angels. By that I mean part of a person's character or nature that guides our thoughts and behavior. And there is an angel inside all of us. It's time to let that angel inside of you take the lead. I'm going to end on a musical note with the words of Eminem from Losing. If you had one shot or one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted in one moment, would you capture it or just let it slip? You only get one shot. Do not miss your chance to blow this opportunity. It comes once in a lifetime. And my final words are from Jimi Hendrix. When the power of love overcomes the love of power, the world will know peace. So while this worship service has come to an end, and as you prepare to leave this sacred space, remember that our work continues. So let it be. Amen. Ashe.